To better follow along with the Sober Eating Workshop, we suggest you download the forms that go with this workshop. You can find them at sober.oabirthday.org.
The 2016 OA Birthday Party Sober Eating Workshop. I'll just give you... I'm glad you're all excited. We're excited, too. Let me just give you a little roadmap. First of all, we did not expect this overwhelming amount of response and support, so we are humbled and ill-prepared. We don't have enough handouts for everybody. If you want a handout and did not get one, see me after the meeting, and I will secretly give you my OA email address. And you can then email me. And after I get inundated with 4,000 emails, I will get to each of you and send you the handouts via Word document. And I do apologize for not anticipating this tremendous response. We're going to start with Adam, who is going to tell us a little bit about his story and a little bit about his ideas on sober eating. Then Tim will go through the worksheet. We'll go through the sober eating sheet, the sheet that says sober eating on the top of it. He'll talk about it. So if you don't have a sheet, you're not going to not get the information. And then we're going to do some breakout groups, where we have some other forms. Some of you have them. Others, we're holding them in the back, and we'll bring them to your tables as we do the breakout groups. Kelly has something to say. There's an empty seat next to you. If you could raise your hand, there's a couple up here. Bob, would you grab that stuff? And you know, you can also pull those chairs around the table a little bit, make everyone cozy. Lauren, is that empty next to you? No, somebody's there already. Okay. There's a couple up here. You can just grab my backpack, Bob. I don't need a seat. Yeah, thank you. So up here, there's a couple of seats, ladies. Hey, Mike, when you have a second, could you go to see the guy in the tapes and ask him if he has a stand for the mic we're going to put on the podium? His name is David. He's behind the All-Star Tapes deck. Yeah, right down the hall. Hey, Jeff. Never mind, Mike. He's the other guy. Can we get? Do you have a desk stand that we could put on the podium? No desk stands? Okay. No. There are no stands apparently, so I guess you have to.
Sorry about that.
All right. So is everybody cozy and ready and comfortable? Yes. All right. So without further, and we've got more chairs coming just in case. Okay. Great. Well, again, we welcome you to the Sober Eating Workshop, and without further ado, let me turn it over to Adam.
Good morning, everyone. I figured we'd start and sort of set the right intention and maybe take a moment, like 30 seconds, and then we'll start the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Hi, everyone. I'm Adam. I'm a compulsive overeater. Jeff, I'm so happy you're here. We're not good at this piece of getting it together. And if anybody doesn't know Jeff, he's really a great organizer. So I'm sure many of you have been here for the weekend and have heard a lot of different speakers and stories and inspiration about this program. And it's with great humility that I speak here and share with you maybe a little bit of I hope not, but maybe a little bit of a different focus and a different message. And the person I have to thank is really my sponsor who showed me what it means to be a sober member of this program. And I hope really my intention is to capture what it is I do, what it is we do, that has given me the life that I would never have expected. And it's important for me to say that I still can't get over that. I can't get over that I'm standing up here. Right? I can't get over it. I have 17 years of abstinence, and I'm down 135 pounds. But I used to share this a lot, that this is my miracle. This is the thing. This is my internet. This is my getting to the moon. This is the thing that I can't believe. I can't believe that it happened for me. I can't believe that one day I was out of control, right? And just so out of control, and then it stopped. And I don't know exactly what or why or how this happened to me, right? But something happened where I was insane and out of control, and then I wasn't. And I want to share my story and kind of with a real focus on what it means to be sober with food. I love words. I love talking about words that don't capture it. So I said I'm abstinent, and I said I'm a compulsive overeater, but those words don't really capture my experience. I'm a glutton. I don't know if the guy who started Gluttons Anonymous is in the room, right? But that's really, it's a shame we lost that program, right? It's a shame because compulsive overeating does not do justice to my experience. I'm a sick, sick eater. We were talking this morning, a group of us, about if you watched me on camera when I wasn't looking and you saw what was going on in my disease, it was disturbing, right? It wasn't some gentle compulsivity. It was gluttony, right? It was full-on out-of-control addiction. And when I started sharing that, you know, the men around me were just shaking their head, right? Because they all get that it wasn't like disease light, right? There's a seriousness of purpose to what we're doing here today. It's really the anti-disease light. This is not a disease light. This was for me, right? This was heroin with food. And, so I'm a glutton, right? And I'm also abstinent. I was looking up this morning, you know, speaking of words, what abstinence is in the dictionary. It's a voluntary forbearance specifically from indulgence of an appetite or craving from eating some food, or habitual abstaining from intoxicating beverages. Those are the examples that are given in the dictionary, right? It's just some sort of act of refraining. Whereas the word sober also has that. It has abstaining in the use of food and drink, not addicted to intoxicated drink, not drunk. But sober also has definitions like this: marked by sedate or gravity or earnest, thoughtful character or demeanor, unhurried and calm, showing no excessive or extreme qualities of fancy, emotion, or prejudice. Right? So the idea of what it means to be sober is way beyond just refraining. Right? So we like to use the word sober, right? Because it's far more than just stopping eating, right? And it's far more than just a diet, a thing we all, you know, that guys like me went on many of them, right? It's not a bad word either, diet. It's so not a bad word in my experience. It's just what I eat and what I don't eat, right? But the connotation for us here is that it meant that I was holding my breath, right? And then I couldn't hold it anymore. But the idea of what it means to be sober, which we're going to really talk about, is about an approach and a mentality of what it means to have this disease and what it means to arrest the disease and how I can even enter into the arena and have a beginning, right? How do I even begin on this journey, right? Because I can't do it if I'm killing myself, right? It's really hard to find God when I'm killing myself. So I want to talk a little bit about kind of my story, what had happened, you know, what happened, what it was like. I was thinking about it this morning. I don't know why. I have no idea why it happened to me. I have no idea if I can truly explain, you know, why and what. I don't know. I just know that at an early age, very early age, I found out that food feels really good. It's not just that it's not just that I have an addiction. It's just that it feels so good, right? And it shaped, and I think it shaped a lot of my beliefs about how to do life and how to get what I want. So for us in this room, many of us have had this feel-good experience from an early age. And me, I found it early on. There was stuff that was going on in my life. My twin brothers were born, and it was so jarring, right? I remember the night they were born. I was 5 years old. I was scared, right? I was probably, you know, I was a frightened little kid. And I was sleeping in my parents' bedroom. My dad was off at the hospital, and my mom was always there. And I woke up, and she wasn't there. She was pregnant, 7 months pregnant, pre-ultrasound days. And I woke up, and she wasn't there, and I ran into my older sister's room, and there was a note I couldn't read, and there was a note that she ran into early labor. She had no idea she was having twins. One of the children, my younger brother, the younger twin, suffered brain damage, and it was a whole story of, you know, it was a devastating blow to the family. Devastating. And I remember the atmosphere of profound sadness about this kid, right, and what it means in 1974 or 1975 to have a child like that coming from where I come from. He didn't even live with us at first. He lived in foster care for the first 2.5 years. It was too hard. And it's so easy to sit here and say that I found food then, and that's the genesis, the origins of my issue. But really, I remember being deeply, deeply impacted by my mother and father's absence and everything that it meant to have that child and that experience and how it colored all our family life for years until this day, right? And I can sit here and say that's why I found food, but I don't think so, right? I think I would have found food anyways, and I think that once I find food in the way that I find it, which is once I start, I can't stop. And my whole day becomes about, I may be going about my day, but in the back of my mind, I'm saying, okay, when and where is the food? When am I going to get to it? Right? So I know that would have happened no matter what. Because I just like, I mean, I don't know for sure, but I really like the taste of food. Right? So I really like it. So what if you have what I have and you have a response, because everybody loves food. Who doesn't love food? Right? I just take it to a level that hurts me. So I started at an early age learning that if I want to eat in that way, right, which is once I start, I can't stop sick eating, I got to start lying and I got to start hiding and I can't let you know what's really going on with me, right? Because if you truly know what's going on with me, you'll be disturbed, right? I was sharing this morning an episode where I was like, I was in my 20s in college and maybe late teens, and I had some friends over, you know, and they knew me. They knew I was heavy, so that wasn't a mystery. And they, you know, like, so, and at 19, 20, I don't know if I or them could appreciate the gravity of what my condition was. I'm one of six children, and I would love, my mom would make these vats, you know, filled with, like, spaghettis and meatballs. That's a typical dinner, and it was 2:30 in the morning. My friends were out. I didn't know they were staying at my house on winter break. And I, for some reason, I wasn't out with them, and I didn't know when they were coming back. And I went in the kitchen. I do what I do, which is it's such an urgent matter that I eat when I'm in that space. It's so urgent for me that I can't wait for utensils or the bowl. So I took this vat. And I poured it over my face, and I was just consuming and just devouring. And I turned around, and my two friends are looking at me. And it was, I saw that they were disturbed, right? And I woke up, and I had a moment of waking up, right? I got to wake up from my lie for a second because I don't want people to see that. I don't want people to see that sickness because it's very disturbing. And I don't want to see it in myself, and I don't want you to see it. So how do I protect that space, right? It's a lot of work because that's how bad I want to eat, right? So I want to eat so bad and practice my addiction so bad when I'm in it, I got to figure out a way to do a mind F. And that's on tape, right? To do a mind F, right? I got to mind F myself. And I got to mind F you. So the first thing I have to do, right? The first thing I have to do to protect my disease is I must find a way to pretend it's not so bad, right? So I got to start saying, hey, this is not so bad. I remember there's one bathroom in my house, in my parents' house. If I go into that bathroom and I wear all black, I can look at myself and say, at 300 pounds, and say, it's not so bad. You know, look at that angle. It's not so bad. So I have a head that could distort the information and come up with a litany of reasons of why I'm okay and why this isn't a problem. I have friends. I'm smart. I have all these things that could protect me from the truth of my experience, which is I'm killing myself because it feels so good, except when it doesn't feel good, right? But it feels good enough. If I'm willing to go to that length to do it, it must feel pretty good, right? I wouldn't do it if it didn't feel good. That's the first thing I need to do. And then I need to come up with a reason to make it your fault and not mine, right? So the next thing I need to do to keep my addiction alive is I have to make it all of your problem, or do another move, which is a good one, which is I'm so bad, I'm so awful, I must eat. And all of the world's problems are about me, and therefore I feel so bad about myself, I have to eat. But I've got to come up and shape my thinking in a certain way, which says that it's not my problem, therefore I have to eat. Right? And so that's a profound disturbance of thought. I'm not even, that's really messed up, right? So I have to, that's how I protect it. And if anybody wants to keep eating, follow these instructions. Right? If anybody wants to keep eating, challenge what I say, right? Say that can't be true. I'll tell you why I'm different, right? You don't understand. And then start blaming everybody in your life for your problems. And I did that really, really, really well. And if somebody tried to approach me in any way of concern, right, I got vicious. Don't you dare tell me that I have a problem. I don't want to hear that. So it's hard to say, does food shape my distorted thinking or does life shape my food? You know what I mean? Like, the more I practice this disease, the more I have to create mind Fs, right? The more I have to change the story up. So to say what's my truth in the disease, I have no idea exactly what it is because I'm so busy protecting my right to eat sick, to eat in that sick way. And what would happen is I was always the heaviest kid, right? And in retrospect, I wasn't that heavy, but I was always heavier than everybody else. You don't wake up 300 pounds. You don't born 300 pounds, right? So in first grade, I wasn't 300 pounds. In fifth grade, I wasn't 300 pounds. But I was bigger than everybody else. And my head, or like there was always one or two of us. I remember like a couple years ago, I was in a coffee bean in L.A. and somebody walked up to me and he's like, Charles? And I'm like, no, that's the other heavy guy from high school. somebody I hadn't seen in a long time, you know, this is very funny. So, there were one or two or three of us that were always like the heaviest guys. And, I don't know. I think that practicing this disease, it's a progressive illness. So not just my body, I get bigger. My world gets smaller, and my thinking gets more and more and more distorted, and the thing that makes me feel good starts to hurt. It starts to really hurt to have this thing. It starts to crush me, and it starts to make me feel bad and get defeated, so I start to fight it, and I figure out a way to fight it, right? And I do this word that we don't like here, diet, which I don't mind now, right? I say, okay, I'm going to control this thing. And I get into the battle and I control it. But in the back of my head, for me, the moment I can control it, I can breathe for a few minutes. But the moment I relax the standards, right? Because I'm fighting the food. right? I'm not fighting. I have no, when I'm in this space of practicing addiction, I have no idea what's that. It's a problem that centers in my mind. So I'm fighting the food, right? And then I'm up against it. And for me, my experience is I was good at it. It was very, very hard for me to muster up the fight to diet. Very hard. But once I did it, I had about a few months in me. And then I saw it happening. I knew I was going to relax the standards. I knew I was going to do this thing. And I didn't know what was going on, right? My parents would bribe. They'd give me money. I'd get bikes. I remember one time my mom, I'll give you $1 for a pound and you'll get a, you know, after 20 pounds, you'll get a bike. And I remember, like, I got the bike and then she's like, you're breaking your diet. And I said, no, I'm not. And I had, like, white powder all over my face. You know, I was a bad hider. I was, because the urgency, it's so important. I'm so sloppy. When I have to eat, I have to eat. So I'm not a guy who puts the tinfoil away well. You know, I just, you can tell it was me every time, and every time I'm going to lie and say it wasn't me. So, but something would happen where I'd go to battle, and then something would happen. I'd take that, I knew I was supposed to follow the plan, and then I'd break it. And then slowly but surely, the whole thing would come tumbling down, plus a rebate, right? So something happened to me, right? Something happened to me where once I start, I can't stop. Right? So it's not just that my head is off. It's that I have a weird sensation when it comes to food, right? Where if I eat using certain behaviors in a certain way, I can't stop. And that's the beginning of this cycle, right? So when we talk about arresting the disease here and sobriety, right, I really understood, and we'll get to this, what they meant in Alcoholics Anonymous by what it means to be a drunk. I get it, because I do that with certain type of eating behaviors. Once I start, I can't stop. That's my experience. And sometimes I feel like that can get lost in translation in terms of, unfortunately, in terms of the collective of what we do here to get well and arrest our disease, that could get lost, right? And that's the foundation of what we do, is how do we arrest the craziness around food? I can go to, you know, a different self-help group to get feel-goods. So I started these diets early on. Third grade, I think, was my first one. Every few years, another one. And every time, the same result. Every time I relax the standards and boom, right? It's on. And over the years, I did some really good ones. You know, again, a few months and I'd get bigger and bigger. And my world got smaller. I was so invested in having friends and the right credentials and the right atmosphere and the right girlfriend and the right things to make me feel like you won't see me as not okay and I won't see me as not okay. And over time, my world got smaller. Just to really capture the food piece, I grew up kosher, right? And one of the best sensations for a kosher person is to discover unkosher. Right? It's like, wow. For what I can get for $20, it's unbelievable. Right? So really, really, I should have stayed kosher. It wouldn't have made it so bad. So I'm talking to a clown and I'm ordering, you know, and I'm not one of these guys who like orders like two Cokes just to like pretend that I'm not doing it. You know, like I'm going to order $20 worth of the dollar menu. And I'm ordering. And the clown says to me, is that all for you? And I'm like, what did you say? And the clown said, is that all for you? It's such a great illustration of how involved I am in my disease and how in that space, this is the consequence of lying, blaming, and pretending I don't have a problem, right? There's nothing free in this world, right? So that is my consequence. I live completely obsessed with me and what you're thinking and how it looks, and I'm not interpreting the world accurately, right? So when we talk about doing the steps here, it probably helps to do it in a space where you're open, you're not distorting as much, right? So to do the steps when you're sober is really important. as far as I'm concerned. It was my experience. So I continued this for a long time. It's important to talk about some, you know, marks on the, you know, some spots on the journey that changed. When I was about 19 years old, I was a guy who went to a Jewish religious university, and I wore a Munich Olympics 1972 t-shirt, which is not just a testament to where I was at. I didn't even realize it. I was so angry, and I would smoke cigarettes. I would ash on myself. I didn't even care. I wore the same outfit. I showered. I never didn't shower, but I didn't brush my teeth. I smoked, and I was just bitter. And somebody said to me, and this is the beginning of my journey, somebody said to me, you know, you should just start by brushing your teeth. But I heard it. I heard it. And I didn't even know what Overeaters Anonymous was. I heard somebody say to me, brush your teeth every day. And that made a big difference for me. It was years before I went to OA. But I took that first action of change. And then a few years later, I was in I was in a field placement somewhere. And in the profession I'm in, and somebody, like this guy, said, it's my ethical obligation to tell you that I feel that you have a problem with food. And I'm like, you know, really? Yeah, really? You know, and it was just me and him. He was actually a great guy. And he said, it's my belief that you are addicted to food. And I said, what are you talking about? Alcoholics are addicted. And I said, I have to eat. He said, but you don't have to eat like that. And that was the first time I ever heard about anything remotely that has to do with anything that would look like me and out of control eating in an addictive way. I didn't even really know what addiction was. I just thought it was brown bag, you know, street alcoholism, like, you know, street gutter drinking, winos, right? Just drunks. I didn't know about it. But he said, he introduced the concept, and then he said, you can go to a spiritual program where they'll really help you. You can go to a men's group. I said, okay, I'll go to the men's group. Right? And that bought me another few years. Right? And then I came, then I tried Overeaters Anonymous in Chicago where I was. And this dude, like, was sharing. He was so angry. And he's like, I'm out of here. And he tears out of the meeting. You hear his car screech and bumps into another car, and you hear him screech out. I'm like, those people are so mad, you know. They don't know what they're doing, you know, like, that place is really messed up. I don't go to groups, I give groups. That's my head. That's my arrogance. That's my disease, practicing why I don't have to get sober with food, right? So I bought myself another couple years. Then I came to L.A. Then I heard, like, I saw a lot of skinny women in the valley talking about stuff, and I'm like, they wear perfume, they don't get it, I'm out of here. Right? I'm out of here. Bought me another couple years of keep doing what you need to do. Got the best MD on the planet, supposedly the expert. He was great, right? He was great. I'm going to do whatever he says. Got really into it. Had everything except for like a chef, right? And bought me another couple years. Something happened. I worked side by side with a guy in the program, and who's my sponsor today. And we worked with females who had eating disorders. I kind of got the sense that he knew a thing or two about weight and weight loss. And I walked up to him, 300 pounds, and I said, "I just get the sense you know about this. Like, you talk so clearly about what they need and all that. I'm like, you know about weight loss?" And he's like, "Yeah, I used to be over 100 pounds overweight. I'm like, "Wow, you're real thin. You'd never know." And I said, "What do you do?" He's like, I never deviate." I'm like, "What do you mean you never deviate?" Attacking, not like a kind, like interested. "What do you mean you never deviate?" And he's like, "Well, I never deviate." I'm like, "You don't have frozen yogurt?" He's like, "No, I don't." And I'm like, "What do you know?" In my head. Right? Right? 300 pounds, right? 300 pounds, out of my mind, miserable, my world shrinking, right? I feel like everything's being held by a thread. And I tell him he doesn't know what he's talking about. So in my head, I'm, thanks. Bought me another couple years, right? Just shy of my 30th birthday, a week before, I come into Overeaters Anonymous, and just shortly, I'll tell you what happened. I went to Ralph's on November 8th, 1998. I have no idea why. I just devoured the pastry section. I bought all this stuff, and I do what I do, which is really fast eating in my car. I just devoured it, right? Not so different than other times, but something in that same genre of disturbing. And I come to work that next day, and the woman who is my sort of mentor had a bunch of years in AA, and she said to me, "What is wrong?" I said, "I can't stop eating. I can't." And she said, "We're going to a meeting." With such command, she said, "We're going to a meeting." And then I said, "Why?" And I just sort of felt this strength that I wasn't used to, and I sort of followed her. I said, "Why are you doing this for me?" She said, "This is what we do." You know, sort of mantras. "This is what we do for people. And thank you, thank you, thank you. Don't thank me. Do it for someone else." And a second mantra. And then we get to the meeting, and she says, she's not in our program, and it's a small meeting in Woodland Hills, California, and she raises, it doesn't exist anymore, and she raises her hand. She said, "He wants to share." So I said, "I can't stop eating. I just can't stop eating." And she said, "Okay, here's what you do. Abstain no matter what and read trashy novels and go to these meetings." That's what she said. You just keep coming to these meetings and this is a good start. So that's November 9th. I'm like, okay. On November 15th, this is a central part of my story. On November 15th, I turned 30. I was at my in-laws' house. They decided to make me a nice cake to celebrate my new abstinence. And I'm just kidding. Sorry. I owe them an amends. Note to self. I grab this tiramisu. I'd never had it. I shove it in my pocket. Right? It's sticky as could be. Right? And I shove it in my pocket and I devour it. And here's the most important part. I come to Overeaters Anonymous, and 90% of you tell me it's okay. Right? Don't worry. And it wasn't a keep coming back. They said stuff like, if you're on your way from L.A. to New York and you get a flat tire in Phoenix, they said something about, don't worry about it. It's all good. And thank God. And I'm like, oh, this is great. Every so often I can stuff my face here. This is awesome. Right? Every so often I can do some sick eating. Right? It's cool. Right? It's no big deal. And thank God my sponsor said, "Oh, that's drunk. Oh, you got drunk on food. That's sick. That's sick eating." And I didn't, and there began, he said, "Jump off the cliff." He said, "You can't make decisions for yourself when it comes to food." Right? I have lost, and I sort of picture like a jury, you know, like when they lock you up for being crazy. You know, I'm talking about 5150, like they'll put you like, "You have lost the rights to make decisions for yourself because you're a danger to self or others." And I picture like the people versus Adam when it comes to food. And the people versus Adam, and they really look at my food and they're like, "Oh my God, you break chairs, you break furniture, you have spaghetti bowls over your face, and you eat in such a disturbing way. You should be locked up when it comes to food. You have lost the right to make sane decisions." And left to my own devices, I have lost the right to be sane. I cannot make sane decisions of myself. Right? So there began this journey into a whole new way. There began the freedom. Right? Freedom started at that point because I am no longer the author of what's good for me in food and life. And I was taught to share at meetings about how I abstain no matter what. So in the beginning, there's just keep saying, "I went to San Francisco, I drove there, I abstained." Right? I was sober. I went on a plane, I abstained. I want to hit someone, I abstained anyways. I yelled at someone, I abstained. I was a jerk to someone, I abstained. I was happy, I abstained. Right? I abstained no matter what. I heard this, no matter what, no matter what, no matter what, no matter what, no matter what. I didn't hear like words like wonky. Wonky, that's a word I hear sometimes. I didn't hear about wonky or floating fruit or my meals are getting bigger. Right? I didn't hear that. because that's my disease for me, right? That is an expression of my illness. If my food gets wonky, that means I'm in my disease. So I started to learn how to share about how do we arrest this disease using the power that I can't access myself and using the principles of the program, right? Using the steps, realizing that I have a soul sickness, realizing that the word sober is far more than just arresting my addiction. It's about my character and how I show up to life because my thinking is completely messed up, right? And I need an overhaul on the whole thing. I need an overhaul on the whole thing. So I started doing this and going through it. And it is not, and I'm moving towards a finish here. I think for the people I see who are long-term abstinent, who have what I want, it's not been like, they're not like rah, rah, everything is great all the time. This is tough. Right? This living thing. Food's not my problem. Food's over. Right? Thank God. Whatever life is my problem. Right? The food's sane. The food is no longer a problem. Right? So, because I know what it means to be sober with food. And you'll hear soon what that means. Food's not the problem. Living's hard. Right? Giving up this character. Right? I want to feel good. And I thank God I don't believe food will make me feel good anymore. So this program better work to make me feel good. Or else I'm going back to the food. So something's got to work here because I want to feel good all the time. That's just how I roll, right? I roll where the guiding force of me is what's going to feel good, right? That's what drives me. That's what compels me. And I don't do things that don't feel good, right? And if I do things to myself that I think feel good and they hurt me, it's because I'm doing that MF-er, right? I'm doing that thing to my mind. So I started doing this, and eventually I started sponsoring people. And I just want to, for those of you who aren't in California, I just want to share a little bit how this, what you're at, you know, how this workshop evolved. It started with one guy, and I was getting busy, and he said, let's do some breakfast, right? One guy, right? I said, let's do some breakfast because we have to do some recalibrating sometimes after the meetings when there's too much talk of wonkiness and food getting bigger, right? Let's get some perspective, right? So we went, and then a third guy came, and then a fourth. And now every week, right, we have this big get-together fellowship where we talk about this thing called sober eating, right? We talk about the beginning of the program being How do I acknowledge what my disease is and how it's hurting myself and participate in a spiritual way in my recovery by making it begin with what goes in my mouth and how to do that in a sober fashion. And it's changed my life, right? It's changed my life, this whole thing, right? I can come up here and speak and have a message. You know, I could be effective at all things. I could be a friend that's trustworthy. I could be keep secrets. I could be a parent. You know, I can have children that want to talk to me, right? I could be a son. My whole life experience is different, right? All because I'm willing to stop this, to approach this life sober, right? Because if I'm in the food, I make up the game. I make up the whole story, and that really hurts me. And when I came here, I never would have known this, what I'm saying now. I just knew I was hurting with food. So we're going to share a little bit more detail now about what this looks like and how this is a good beginning to working the steps and accessing a community of support to find the power that I know I never had. Right, I didn't have that power by myself. No way. So thanks for letting me share.
Hi, I'm Tim, compulsive overeater. So right now we're going to go through this sober eating handout right here. Again, this is something that we put together prior to last year. This is the second year we've done this. So there's some more coming. There's a few up here. There's a couple up here. Help yourself. But there are more coming right now. When they show up, you can just raise your hand. Okay. And, well, we don't have them now, but they are coming from Kinko's. I think they went to the one down in Santa Barbara, up in Santa Barbara again. So this is the handout, and this is what we talk about every Sunday morning with in particular newcomers. We've always got people sitting down and to the table, and this is how we kind of take them through what is sober eating. This is not a prescribed food plan, but a method that defines a food plan by consulting with others. Just like Adam said, we make bad food choices. Always. Compulsive overeaters always make bad food choices on their own. I will never be able to access the proper food choices. I always make bad food decisions. I'm down 90 pounds or 91 pounds this month, and been maintaining it for 6 years. But on my own, I would be, I don't know where I'd be. Sober eating is just the beginning of this program. There is no way in losing the weight. I believe I've done it before. Adam has done it before. Most of us have done it before on our own. But unless we have a spiritual connection with a higher power, there's no way to maintain that. And you get to decide that. That's the great part. Working the steps, will lead you to that. But that's the only way to maintain it. Sober eating may help us surrender and access a power greater than ourselves that can restore us to sanity both with our food and with our lives. I mean, that's really what the ultimate goal is. I love the definition of sober where it is character building. It's not just about the food. There's no way. Oh, here we go. Raise the hands. They are here. Oh my goodness. That's all right. After the 20 are gone, we'll have another raise of hands, but I'll continue on here. What is important, one of the things that is very important here is that this is not the only approach to abstinence. There are many other games. This is just what we found that worked for us, the approach is how serious we take our food. And how we start off is what Adam talked about. What is food addiction? Here's the doctor's opinion in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It talks about the allergy of the body. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy. That is, the phenomenon of craving is limited to a class that never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And once having formed the habit and found that they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and they become astonishingly difficult to solve. This is the way I use food. This is absolutely the way I use food. It instantly changed my perception of reality. Once I started eating my alcoholic foods, I was off to the races. And once I triggered that allergy, the obsession kicked in. And that's what we'll talk about, the obsession of the mind next. And, I hear people talk about, well, we have to face the tiger three times a day. And thank goodness he told me 6 years ago, if you don't pick up your food, you'll never have another food problem. And for 6 years, I have not had a food problem. And I've got a lot of life problems, but I don't have food problems. And it's very clear, and that's one of the things that really drew me to Adam, was that it is very clear that there are foods that I'll never be able to handle, and that's okay, and that's just accepting reality for what it is, and moving forward. We hear a lot about I've heard it several times, and it always rings that bell in my head that I'm taking foods back. I heard a little bit of it tomorrow. I heard of a little bit this morning I'll start here, but hopefully I'll get to a place where I can take things back. That's not the way, that's not my experience. Maybe for other people, it might work, but not my experience. Actually, the road went the other way. There were more foods that I found that triggered me as the road narrowed a little bit. As we can move on here later in the big book that talks about the obsession of the mind. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They are restless, irritable, and discontent unless they can experience that sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, and as so many do, the phenomenon of craving develops, and they pass through the well-known stages of spree, emerging remorseful and with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over unless this person can experience an entire psychic change that is of very little hope for recovery.
So it's important in this part to look at the mental piece when they describe our disease. It's easy to say, once I start, I can't stop, for me at least. And I also want to say that it's really important. I this is what works for me and for some of us. It may not work for you, right? And we're very open to the idea that this is one approach and one method, and there are many. I once took somebody's food early on who was eating Tootsie Rolls, and he was, you know, he's the only dude I know who ever did this, right? He was a guy who had the same burden that I did, and he was eating Tootsie Rolls, calling in Tootsie Rolls, and I just can't even fathom that. So to say it doesn't exist, of course it does, right? It's just not our experience at all, right? So in this piece, when we say, how do we get this piece about allergic response, I think it's easy to read that in the big book and in the stories and to romance the idea of, once I start, I can't stop, right? How many people in this room have experience of, once I start, I can't stop, and it's disturbing, right? Okay. So people get that. But what about the obsession piece? What's the mental condition? So the restlessness and the irritability and the discontentment, I think, does justice to the entire spectrum of what it means to not be right in the head. If when they talk about restlessness, anybody relate to this profound boredom? Profound itchiness. I can't sit with myself. Even on the way over here, I have to make phone calls. Right? 17 years into this, I gotta be on the phone, right? I don't wanna be with myself. It's not so easy, right? That's a restlessness or a profound, not just boredom. I wanna be anywhere but here with me, right? And the crankiness, right? And the chronic dissatisfaction of everything, there should be more, there should be more, there should be more. This isn't enough. I'm not enough. And I can't access joy. Even if on paper I have tons, even if on paper my life is wonderful, I can't access the joy because I'm busy in a state of chronic dissatisfaction or discontentment. So when they talk about the mental part of it, that's how I interpret the world. Right? I can't be here. I'm cranky and angry at you, and nothing's good enough, and I need more.
Overeaters Anonymous, definition of abstinence. Abstinence is the action of refraining from compulsive eating and compulsive food behavior while working towards and maintaining a healthy body weight. You know, this is what we talk about on Sunday morning, not being able to stop eating certain foods once you start. You know, that's a real, one of the things Adam did for me was, after 30 days of abstinence, we sat down and he asked me, what foods have you put on your plate that once you put them on your plate, you were already looking for seconds. You were watching the bowl being passed around. You were already, you know, you wanted more. You know, once I start eating a certain food, I don't want to stop. I want extra. I want a little bit more. Because I can't handle those like a normal person. I've never had that problem with broccoli or carrots or celery or salad, you know. But when potatoes and rice and pasta, and if you put that in front of me, I'm already taking food from my kids. I have no problem when I'm in my disease taking food from anyone. It does not matter. My kids, my wife, it really, you know, it doesn't matter. like I won't sneak food. I'll just take it. You know, I was raised in that kind of family. You know, it was like, if you want it, you go get it. Obsessive craving for certain foods. You know, again, this is just triggering that obsession. It's triggering the allergy. Do you want to play with a certain food, or do you want to be free from it? You know, can I handle, you know, one of the foods that he asked me after 30 days that I put on my plate? It was potatoes. In particular, it was potato salad. Now, I might be able to eat baked potatoes, but he just said, do you want to play or are you done? Are you done with these foods, or do you want to, because you're going to lose. As compulsive overeaters, we are going to lose. We cannot control and enjoy. If we're controlling, we're not enjoying. If we're enjoying, we're definitely not controlling. Okay? Thinking you can control your intake of alcoholic foods. We just talked about that. I am not, if I'm controlling, I'm not enjoying. I cannot control my intake of my alcoholic foods. Negotiating with food. You know, it's amazing how what kind of salads, what can be put in a salad and defined when you send it in as a salad. You know. If there was lettuce on the plate, it was a salad, you know? And one of the things that food always did for me was it instantly changed my state of mind. You know, all the worries, everything that I had, as soon as I was in the drive-thru at McDonald's, I was okay. I was in the zone. I felt better. I could feel it now just talking about it. Talking about how I felt when I got that hit, you know, and it really was. It was an absolute drug for me as a compulsive overeater. And it did. Nothing changed in the world. Nothing in my outside world changed. But in my mind, everything changed as soon as I got it. And over time, I always go back to food. If I do not continue to enlarge upon my spiritual condition, I am going to eat, period. You know, the guys make fun of me that I'm dressed in a suit and that I'm making them look bad. And I don't work in a business where I have this. I wear them for weddings, funerals, and this. This is the top piece of business I take care of every day. Because if I don't, if this is not number one, before my wife yelled at me because she, last night, I said, listen, I'm gone tomorrow. Sorry, I didn't let you know, but it really doesn't matter to me. I'm more than happy to make her mad because I'm saving my life here today. Period. It is a save your life day. Every day with food is a save your life day. You're either moving towards it or you're moving away from it.
If you want to work on your relationship, don't come to our group. All right, just a qualifier. I don't think it'll help you. Yeah. So we're talking about things that activate that thinking, and anything that could activate the obsession. So one of the things that we're, the sober approach, this thoughtful, mature, I'm going to beat the game approach to this program, in a sober way, what are the things that produce sanity with food for me, right? What are the things that give me a sense of calm that I'm acting and participating in my food in a way that invites God and it invites an experience of sobriety? So one of the things we talk about is excess weight. A mature way of doing this is you don't get sober with food and then lose 300 pounds in a week, right? It's not designed to be an experience of rapid weight loss as a priority. It's designed to create freedom from the obsession. But if I'm eating too much, right, and I'm gaining weight, it's an indication that I'm not having freedom from the obsession. So I just want to discuss a little bit how we look at weight and weight gain. Right, for our group is not for anorexics, but it's probably and I can't speak for anorexia, but it's probably there's a woman in our program who I've been hearing share a lot lately, and it's really the opposite experience. It's just about, we talk about what we don't eat, they talk about what they have to eat, right? But it's really, it really is, using this principle, it could be the identical experience. just in the other direction. But what we so what we talk about is it's not about the weight, but it's about the weight in the sense that if I'm doing this and I'm not moving towards obtaining and maintaining a healthy body weight, which I remember so vividly when Overeaters Anonymous started taking on this language of, they become buzzwords, like obtaining and maintaining a healthy body weight. It's a mantra, right? I remember when this mantra introduced our OA consciousness, right? I remember it was introduced, right? And I just different sorts of language that we can evolve in, right? I think it's an evolution of how to get well in this disease, which is so tricky because it's so innocent, seemingly. So how do I address the issue of weight? It's all about sanity with food, right? And if my weight is excessive and I'm not moving towards maintaining a healthy body weight, then it's very simple. It's just data. It's just data. We don't personalize the data, right? It's really important. This is not personal. We're actuaries, right? Because we know what goes in and we know what goes out, right? It's no mystery. So I just eat less. And it's not a drastic eat less, right? It's not drastic. As a collective, we'll look at someone's food and say, okay, right? Maybe now do without that, right? One thing. And imagine that it works, but there's a maturity of the approach that's so different than how we do it in the disease, which is, I gotta fix this. This is terrible, and it's all about my weight. It's not. It's all about the experience of sanity.
So what is sobriety with food? It is a commitment of identifying these foods which produce an allergic reaction and an alcoholic response. You know, I think another word for that is honesty. You know, that was what was impressed upon me from a very I'm back from relapse. I've, you know, gained 120 pounds being out with the food. But it's being honest with what can be handled and what cannot be handled. If you would raise your hands, please, and they will bring over this handout for you. Okay. Another thing we talk about is the belief that we owe it to ourselves to deal with our alcoholic foods like an alcoholic deals with alcohol. This is, again, the top piece of business that we deal with every day. And it is what we don't pick up our foods no matter what. Our aim is to help. Our aim is with help of a higher power to arrest the addiction by removing foods that activate our cravings. There are those alcoholic foods that once we start eating them, we do not or cannot stop. You know, and those need to be put aside. I can make sane decisions about your food, but not about my own. It's amazing the perspective that we have over other people's foods, but never of our own. Again, over time, I will always make bad food choices, no matter what. That is, I am a compulsive overeater, and that is who I am. All food decisions are made with consultation of someone else. Wives, co-workers, sponsors, fellows, anyone but you. That's a big one. That is huge. I was out in one of my experiences is for the first 6 years of abstinence, I brought my food. I work in a business where they provide all the food, as much food as you want. You know, as long as you're there, they will feed you. And I brought my own food for 6 years because I couldn't. There was no sense of peace when I didn't have my own food with me. It was like a security blanket, and so. I was in the middle of Oklahoma and was unable to bring my food, and my coworker had to pick out my food for me. And it was a scary, scary, scary moment. But it was either do that or start down that path. And I'd been down that path, you know. And that path, me making my own food choices, is not a good path. And it was so much easier. Yes, I was hungry. Yes, I was afraid of all those things. But it was another step, the next step in a conscious contact with everything's going to be okay. I'm going to make it 3, 4, 5, 6 hours. But on my own, I can't make it 20 minutes to the next meal without thinking about food. Let's see. What is sobriety? This is, again, what we talk about on Sunday mornings. What is sobriety with food? It's a commitment. Oh, I already did that, didn't I? It's okay. A prescribed amount of food. For example, one plate rule of weighing and measuring. A plate will typically be a balanced, non-alcoholic foods that support sober eating. You can put, a whole plate of pasta, a whole plate of whatever you want. I mean, that's not what we talk about. We talk about, for myself, I don't eat any kind of grain, so it's protein and vegetables. It's very simple. I've lived off of that for 6 years now. But as I was talking with somebody else, I'm very lucky that my alcoholic foods are like the breads. Once I start eating the breads, I don't want to stop eating the breads. And, you know, how many grains a day do I have? That's not something that I deal with. It's so much easier for me to put that aside, than it is to manage it, because I'm just not a good manager. I am definitely not a good manager. I weigh and measure my food. And one way of measuring could be one plate. That's a form of measurement. But it's so much easier for me. When you tell them you weigh and measure, isn't that restrictive? It has been more freedom for me than anything I ever thought possible. It is amazing how much freedom there is in weighing and measuring. There's no thinking. The amount of time I spent thinking and obsessing, the energy, the discontentment about getting and having and my food, now it's just like the food's going to be there. That's why I brought my food. I didn't have to worry about somebody else taking care of me. You know, it's funny because my wife would every once in a while get a little upset at the amount of money I would spend on my food. And I said to her, there was never any budget on when I was binging on food. There was never a food that I wouldn't eat. There was never any kind of budget. And there's still no budget. There's still no budget on my food, period. This is what it took for me to feel okay and to feel safe and secure about my food, was taking food when it was free. There was no, it didn't matter to me. And guess what? If we went bankrupt, that's what it would have taken. Because I know what's out there. I know the type of person that I am out there on my own. I've seen that. My daughter was 6 months old and I actually hit her. But that's the kind of, and I'm still an angry person. There's no doubt about that. But that hasn't happened since. My wife was afraid of me. I hope she's not afraid of me anymore. But that's just who I am. And when I'm out of control when I'm in the food. So on the next page, why are there struggles with food sobriety? With such a simple plan, eating only when it's approved, how do we as addicts willfully disregard our own sobriety commitment, resulting in a binge or an effort to control and enjoy? We're willful people. We think we're entitled to the food. I work hard. That's one I use on my own. I work very hard. I'm entitled to this extra food. Denial or minimizing. Defiance. That's definitely one that could, I'm not going to be told what to do. It's amazing. I hate being told what to do, but in this situation with food, it's amazing how easy it is when you just listen to what someone else has to say. What's worked for 16 and 17 years, that's what I want. I don't want to put my own twist onto it. And it's amazing how it's invaded the rest of my life. I would never ask for help prior. Now I'm able to ask for help. I still put my own twist on some things, and I find that just follow the directions. Just follow the directions, Tim. That's what they're there for, Isolation. No meeting, no outreach calls. I'm not a person that I don't like going out. My wife is a very social person. I'm not that person. I would prefer to work, go to meetings, and go home and do nothing else. But, when it comes to this, I show up. When I'm not working, I go to a meeting every day. And I like to start the day with the meeting. I start the day with my work, with my writing, making sure that I stay in touch. Because on my own, the good food ideas pop up. They do over time. And when I was in program before and got 5 years, It was. I failed to enlarge and get in the middle of the pack. I thought I could do it. I got abstinence. I had the foods, and all of a sudden I was out on my own. And on my own, the food just all it does. It's just a matter of time. But in the middle of the herd, when you're talking to other people, when you're talking about these things, it's amazing how simple it becomes not to overeat when you're dialed into people. And when you're making outreach calls, they're making outreach calls back to you. There's no need to eat. But when you're on your own, it's you against the world. It's you against the world. And the only comfort is food. That's what I turn to, was food.
I don't know how we manufacture willingness here. I don't know. I have no idea. But one of the questions we ask people is, do you want this freedom? Right? Do you want freedom from the obsession, from the addiction? And a lot of people come in and they say they do, right? And you quickly see what comes up in you, right, is a sense of, I want to relax the standards, right? And I want to do it my way. So I don't know exactly I don't know how I arrived at willingness. I don't know. It's not like I was like Mr. Willing before that. But these are the things that if you're struggling, right, and you're doing and you're fighting still, right, maybe something to look at when we do the exercise is what's getting in the way of me and willingness.
Another thing why they're struggling is hunger. You know, it was amazing. I remember the moment where I actually asked Adam what his food plan was. I assumed it was three meals, nothing in between. He's like, no. I eat five times a day. I eat three meals and two snacks no matter what. And now I eat. Some lady asked me, she's like, are you hungry? And I'm like, no, but this is my snack and I'm eating it. You know, I don't save snacks. I don't miss snacks. I don't miss meals. This is what I eat, and I eat it no matter what. And it doesn't matter if I'm hungry or not. It doesn't matter. And I eat five times a day, so it's really 2 to 3 hours between every time I get nourishment. So I really should never be hungry, but I get hungry. And the only thing, physically, I'm not hungry, but there's something else going on. And you know what I do when I'm hungry? I make a phone call. I make an outreach text because I don't know I'll never figure it out and go, oh, that's what it is, and then I'll be fine. You know, on my own, it will be that message will somehow be distorted. All I have to do is put it out. Hey, listen, I'm hungry. I still have an hour to my next snack. And as soon as I put that out there, my hunger dissipates.
And a basic assumption that I think we work with is that whatever hunger is, whatever that meter is to measure it, it's broken in all of us. So whatever that means to be hungry and really make a good assessment of listening to my body, we as a formula say that is completely shattered because I have no idea. I really don't. I mean, every so often I do, but I can generate the idea that I'm really hungry 5 minutes after I eat. 10 minutes. I mean, I don't really. So for the purpose of this, we prevent hunger by eating a bunch of times, but I don't trust that I really, really have a sense of that.
An ego is another thing. It kind of embodies everything back up here. I'm going to do it my way. I can figure it out. You know, that really embodies all the above things. And once the obsession has been triggered, we begin to negotiate with food. You know, and I know I've been there. I've added things back in, you know, and this just slowly edged me right out the door. You know, eating gray area foods. I'm not sure, you know, it is or it isn't. It's yes or it's no. It's very simple. For me, you know, fat serenity. Roseanne talked about this in her World Service, the business conference, about, you know, maintaining extra weight and talking about how peaceful you are about it. That wasn't my experience, you know. And selective honesty, editing what you tell others. You know, I don't talk in a general way about what it used to be like. I try to be as clear as possible about what it used to be like and how it was. And my top weight was 280 pounds, what it was like for somebody like me to be 280 pounds and just out of control. So what does struggling with food sobriety sound like? And I think Adam was, what do you call it? My food is getting wonky. You know, we hear that. I mean, we just got a text from a guy this morning about that he ate cake and as ice cream. Is that what? Yeah. You know, this morning at 4 o'clock, but then sent in the food, you know, that he ate yesterday. I love the honesty. I'm not sure. And again, what I'm talking about is how do we generate willingness? How do we generate that this is, you know, no matter what, we're not going to eat. I ate too much, but here's the recovery. We hear a lot of the pitches about, oh, I overate at this, but here's what I learned from it. Anybody else need a handout? Oh, one last one right over here. And on the floor. I'm abstinence, but I'm in the food. I heard what was it? It becomes technically abstinent. I'm technically abstinent. And it really is. Are you done or do you want to play? Because if you want to play, I encourage them to eat. Because that's the only thing that's going to get you to the willingness. It wasn't anything that I did, on November 4th. The only thing I did up to that point to get me in here was eat. And I ate too much. I ate enough that I threw up in my mouth in the middle of the night. And that generated the will. Because it was a gift. What I have here is a gift. And my only job today is protecting that gift. I didn't do anything to deserve it. I'm really still not a very nice person. I'm not. And that's okay. I'm all right with that. I don't have a lot of friends. That's okay too. But what I am is I'm abstinent. And then they're technically abstinence. So what does sobriety with food look like? Here it is. The 10 step promises of Alcoholics Anonymous. We have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in alcohol or liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as if a hot flame. We react sanely and normally. We will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. This is the miracle of it. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor afraid. This is our experience. This is how we react. As long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. This is, I mean, the pink cloud abstinence everybody talks about when you're new, I've had that for 6 years. I really have. I have, you know, my kids eat pizza, they eat my wife, they all eat those things, and never once has the thought of that eat, you know, oh, I want that. I really, it is, the problem has been removed. And it had been removed before when I came into program, but I didn't enlarge upon a spiritual condition. I did not get in the middle of the herd. I had it. I had the food. And then I just could do it on my own. And I can't do it on my own. You know, the only way I do it is on a day-to-day basis of, oh, I have to remember, I'm a compulsive overeater, and I can't do this on my own. And ultimately, I may have other problems but food is no longer one of them. You know, and that's been the real gift, that I don't have to fight food on a daily basis, and never have had to, never wanted to eat any of those foods. So that's the end of this. We'll move on to the next part, which is this sobriety with food handout. Do you want to do it? No, let's have, well, we're one person up. Yeah.